today we're going to be looking at fifth chapter of Bhikkhu Bodhi's book. The way to a fortunate rebirth, and it starts on page 155, and this talks about something which is a major point of difference between traditional Buddhism and modern Buddhism. Of course, I know that everybody here is very traditional in their approach, but you might be interested to know, because in traditional Buddhist countries, everyone just wants to go to heaven, right? That's what you do. You practice Buddhism so you can go to heaven, and that's basically all there is to it, except for a very, very small minority. Whereas in modern Buddhism, almost nobody cares about going to heaven. People say, I don't want to go to heaven. To which I say, well, it can be better than the alternative. Have a think about it. So interesting that that difference has come about. Anyway, so let's have a look at a few suttas that talk about it, and let's see what kinds of things that they say. These suttas in this chapter are very largely from the Anguttara Nikaya, and that has a number of implications. The first thing is that the Anguttara Nikaya is often said to be perhaps a little bit later as a collection than most of the other suttas, and perhaps the shift in emphasis towards making merit and going to heaven might be perceived as being an aspect of that lateness. We can see whether we think that seems reasonable or not. Another thing, that the fact that it's Anguttara Nikaya means that there are very few cognate suttas. Okay, so Anguttara Nikaya has relatively few corresponding suttas in any Chinese and so on collections. I mean, just to give you an example of this, is the fours in the Anguttara. And these are, okay, fours seems to be quite a lot, which is such a good example. Maybe just try the sixes, just a random case. So down here, these green buttons are where there are corresponding suttas in other Chinese and other collections. So you can see that there are many, many gaps there. So there obviously are a lot of suttas, but there's a whole kind of run of things where there's none at all. Okay? These ones are actually mainly just kind of minor variations on the same theme, so. Anyway, so you get the idea that there are much less correspondences in the other sutta collections. And the third implication that the fact that they're in the Anguttara has is that there are relatively few translations in English available on the web. Anguttara is a bit of a kind of poor cousin of the Nikayas in some way. Not so many translations on the web. Most of the translations that are on the web have been on a site called metanet.org, which the domain name has now become defunct, so it doesn't work at all. So,
what does Anguttara mean?
Anguttara, anga is like a factor or even a thing. Uttara means up.
Factor,
digit. Digit, yeah, digit, exactly, yeah, one digit. Mm. Up by digits.
Right.
It's a bit like the idea, it's almost exactly like the TV show 7-Up.
Didn't you see
the first show 7-Up? Yeah, it was a great program. Mm. They interviewed these people every 7 years throughout their life. Mm. Anyway, that's another thing. So this is the Pali version, it's called Anguttara Nikaya. The Sanskrit version, of course, is called the Ekotara Agama, of course, belonging to the
possibly
Mahasanghika school. Yeah, uncertain. Thanks for that, Jaggi. And uncertain for the reason that
Jaggi.
Thanks for that. That's cool. Yeah.
So what's the organising principle behind?
Yeah. It's just the groups of numbers. Yeah, so the Angled Trick, chapter 1 is all the things, there's one this, there's one that, there's one thing because I teach the abandoning of.
Right.
And then the two is, there's two things.
Right.
What two?
So
numerical discourses, yeah. Bhikkhu Bodhi translates it as numerical. Fours is like, you know, the four, you know, four noble truths or whatever. Okay. So anyway, so first one. In the fours, the Vitara Sutta, Kama Vitara Sutta, there are these. This one has one Chinese corresponding sutta. Now this is an unusual one. It's not in the Agamas, and this says A P To Mo something something something. This end bit is the Sanskrit Pada Shastra, but I don't know what this middle bit is. Do we have any? Do you know what those ones are? Abhidhamma, yeah. This last bit says is a translation of the Sanskrit Pada Shastra, which means like a root treatise or basic treatise. And this one is the actual name of the treatise. So anyway, some kind of Abhidhamma treatise. I'm not sure which one it is.
No?
Collection, yeah. Yeah, some kind of collection. Anyway, one of the Abhidhamma texts. So it has not in the Agamas, because there's relatively little overlap between Anguttara Nikaya and Ekottara Agama, so it's quite normal that there's none in the Agamas. And probably this is one of those Abhidhamma texts which simply collects or quotes from Agama sources. So it's probably an Agama quote inside the Abhidhamma text itself. Anyway. Okay, so, and no English translation on the web. There are amongst these four kinds of kamma, which is declared by me after realizing with my direct knowledge. Okay? And interesting that that's often said that the Buddha just accepted the notion of kamma based on their prevailing beliefs in the culture at his time, but that's clearly not what he's saying here. There is what for? Katamani Chatari. There is because the kamma which is dark with dark results, kanhang kanhavipakang. There is bhikkhu the kamma which is bright with bright results, sukkang sukkavipakang. There is the kamma which is dark and bright with dark and bright results, kanha sukkavipakang. There is the kamma which is neither dark nor bright, akanha asukkang, with neither dark nor bright results, which leads to the ending of kamma. Kamma khayaya samvattati. Okay, so the four kinds. And of course this being within the normal sort of system of Indian logic, admitting four alternatives. Okay, so what's dark kamma with dark results? Here somebody generates an afflictive bodily volitional formation of body, speech and mind. Having done so, he's reborn in an afflictive world. When he's reborn in an afflictive world, afflictive contacts touch him. Being touched by afflictive contacts, he experiences an afflictive feeling, extremely painful, as for example the beings experience in hell. This is called dark kamma with dark results. Right, so here we go. Is he dark on with dark results? He is a certain person. So just to explain the terminology here, so Bhikkhu Bodhi translates as generates. Okay, so the word he's translating there is abhi sankaroti. Okay, so this is from the root sankara, the verb form of sankara. The abhi doesn't mean anything much in the context, but the root of that is actually the same root, ga, or literally kriya or whatever, depending if it's Sanskrit, but this is the same root as kamma. Okay, so it's like sankarang abhi sankaroti. Okay, so using the verb and the noun from the same root, it's the same word as kamma. So one, and it literally meaning to do. So one makes a making by the through the body or something like that, if you translate, or generates a generation or something like that. Does a doing. Kaya sankaram, vachi sankaram, and mano sankaram. So the three doors of action. Okay? Body, speech, and mind. And in this case, they are afflictive. Sabhya bhajhang. Okay? So this is the idea that through one's own choice, one performs an act of will, which can be expressed either through body, speech, or mind, which is afflictive or harmful. Okay. So having done so, he appears in an afflictive world. So the idea that there's a correspondence between our will or our choices and then the places where we end up. Okay. So having reappeared there, being reborn there, upapajati, upannam, then he's contacted by afflictive contacts. And again, tasa pusanti, contacted by contacts that are afflictive. So contacted by afflictive contacts, he experiences feelings, vedanam vediyati, again this repeat of the verb and the noun. Outstanding stylistic feature of Pali. Feels a feeling which is exclusively painful. Ekanta dukkham. Eka, one, anta, side. One-sided painful feeling, just like the beings of hell. It's called dark karma with dark results. Okay, bright karma with bright results. Of course, exactly the same, except instead of the kamha, the sukha, the bright, and the abhyapaja, unafflictive sankaras, reappears in an unafflictive world, and then he experiences unafflictive contacts. And then experiences exclusively pleasant feeling, just like the devas of the Subhagirnaha. Right? The devas of refulgent glory. Yeah? Yeah, I think it's one of those words that it only appears ever in Buddhist translations.
Buddhist high language.
Yeah. Alright. So it's obviously these are extreme cases. Okay, so what is the karma which is both dark and bright and has both dark and bright results? And of course, one does a sankhara through body, speech, and mind, which is both afflictive and non-afflictive. Having done so, he appears in a world which is both afflictive and non-afflictive, and reappears and then experiences feelings which are mixed pleasure and pain, just like vokirna here, sukha dukkham vokirna. Just like humans, some devas, okay, certain devas have a mixture of pleasure and pain, and certain beings in the lower realms. Alright, so the first two we had just the extreme cases of just purely pleasure or painful, but actually most beings, it seems, would be in this kind of in-between mixed state. Yeah, the animal realm's one of the lower realms. Yeah. So they would get the mixed. They get mixed feelings, don't they? They do, perhaps, if they're lucky enough to be born in Australia. Yeah. They get to go to the poodle parlour and get taken to the vet when they're sick and all of these things. Yeah. in much of the world, they don't. In Thailand, they're all sick because they all get ill, eat too much rich food in the monasteries. That's the basic problem of the dogs in Thailand. It's true, you go there, the dogs in monasteries, they look so awful. But the actual reason is because they just got mange because they eat all this greasy curry and stuff like that all the time. Yeah. Okay, so what is the akanha asukkang kama? Neither bright nor dark kama, leading to neither bright nor dark results. The word result throughout here, of course, vipakang. Vipaka literally means the ripening of something. Right? And leading to the ending of kama, kama kayaya. Okay.
Not the destruction.
This is not gaya, it's kaya. Okay? Kaya means, kaya is used for things like the drying up of a stream in a drought, the running out of supplies when you're on a journey, or the waning of the moon. Yeah? And so, but Bhikkhu Bodhi continues to translate it as destruction, but I always think that that's far too kind of strong a translation for kaya. There are other words in Pali that mean to destroy something, like vinasethi or something like that, is to extinguish a fire. Yeah? It's quite a gentle word, actually. It's something has just come to an end.
Ending,
yeah. But it's quite gentle, you know. It's not like destruction is very aggressive. Yeah. Okay, so leading to the ending of karma. Okay. Here, because whatever one abandons, okay, one has volition, whatever volition there is, okay, ya chetana, for the abandoning of the kama which is dark with dark results, okay, whatever volition there is for abandoning the bright kama with bright results, whatever volition for abandoning the dark karma, dark and bright karma with dark and bright results, this is called the karma for which is neither dark nor bright, leading to neither dark nor bright results, which leads to the ending of, with neither dark nor bright results, which leads to the ending of karma. Okay, so it's the volition, jetana, for abandoning all kinds of karma, or the dark and bright karma. So in elsewhere, of course, the three words, jetana, karma, and sankhara, which we've had all the way up through here, are very closely related. And sankhara is defined as jetana, karma is also defined as jetana. Okay. So the mental factor involved here is always jetana, is always will. What that means is that karma is, from a Buddhist point of view, is an internal force, as opposed to, say, the traditional Brahmanical viewpoint, which held that, for example, performing a certain ritual would be a karma, which would have a certain effect. So you could go to heaven by, you know, making a sacrifice or something like that. Or perhaps the Jaina view of karma, which saw karma as being a sort of quasi-material quality inside the body which could be burnt up by ascetic practices. In the Buddhist point of view, karma is an internal volition.
So karma is defined as chetana and sankhara, is that right?
Sankhara is also defined as chetana.
Sankhara is also defined as chetana. So
karma
is defined as
jetana, yeah.
Sankhara is defined as chetana.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Yeah, sankhara is defined as jetana both in the five khandhas and also in the dependent origination. Right. So Ajahn Buddhadasa very famously made the point that in Thailand everyone's only concerned about the first three kinds of karma, and no one cares about the last kind of karma?
Which is?
Karma that leads to the end of karma.
What is it that would be mistaken as a karma and japana and sankara?
What is the
general sense? The
general sense is the same.
Specific sense.
Specific sense.
Yeah.
What's the specific? That's what you're asking. What's your answer? What would you say?
No, I want to know the idea.
Okay. Specific sense. Okay. What I would say to that is, it's a very good question. It's very kind of subtle matter. But what I would say is that generally speaking, they have the same meaning. But let's put this up here.
So what has the same meaning?
Karma
and
Jetana and Sankara. Okay. So karma, Jetana and Sankara. Remembering that both karma and sankhara are defined as jetana, okay? So karma equals jetana, and sankhara also equals jetana. So they all have same general meaning. So the question is, how are they used differently in context? What I would suggest is that karma is usually used in ethical context. Okay, so karma is usually used when you're saying this is the good kind of thing that you do good karma, this is the kind of thing you do to do a bad karma. Yeah, and so it's usually used in the context of an ethical teaching. Okay, now what we saw in that last sutta was where it's breaking out of that. Yeah, it's going past the use as an ethical teaching towards the use as a more, maybe you call it an existential teaching, yeah? How you get beyond the black and white karma. So I would say, but that's normally where sankhara would be used, is usually used in existential context. So that means sankhara is used, for example, in the five aggregates. Khandhas, good and bad acts.
As
Jetana
has more. Karma is more ethical.
Karma is more ethical, yeah.
And Sankara.
Sankara
is more. Action.
Yeah.
And karma and sankhara, it means both bodily and verbal as well, not only the mental.
Not only the mental, yeah. It's certainly, they're both expressed through body, speech, and mind. Yeah. So there's a moving out, yeah, there's a moving out from that. But yeah, you're right, the jetana. I think in defining them as jetana, the Buddha was wanting to point back in more to that psychological aspect of them. Because sankhara and karma are used in the Brahmanical context, they're both used to mean a ritual. Yeah? So But the jetana is generally applied, like the sankhara through the six doors is also always defined as jetana. Independent origination.
Yes,
Arahant still has jetana.
Yes, Arahant still has jetana.
Yeah, but not the other two.
Yeah, not the other two.
Yeah. Yeah? So Jetana is more talking, Jetana is a psychological, logical quality. So it's a part of how the mind works. You have to make choices. You have to be able to direct the mind in a certain way. Yeah, if it's used, so normally when jetana, when somebody jetanas, when they will, then they're making, if that has an ethical quality to it, then that would be karma. Yeah? Okay, if you have a will which doesn't have any ethical quality, then this wouldn't be karma.
What
wouldn't be karma?
Did you say also that it wouldn't be?
Not Yeah, because the existential aspect is that aspect that's leading to rebirth. It's leading to continued existence. Yeah. That's right. The act of sankhara, what it literally means is like building up. Yeah, so the sankhara, what you're doing, like it's explained there, is you're abhisankharoti, you're constructing. That's actually another word that he uses. In the verses after the Buddha was enlightened, it says actually the house has been demolished. And the house, the word for the demolishing of the house is actually visankharagatam. Okay, so the house is now visankharad. It's deconstructed, literally deconstructed.
So if you're a non-person,
if you were.
Perfect, purely hypothetically.
Most unusual.
Yeah?
Then how you can have, how you can, you know, create cards or cards in the bank, can't receive cards in the bank? Like, how do you opt for it?
How do you opt for it?
Yeah. Or it's just a given once you're around?
I don't think so. I think it seems more that, because it says it's leading to the destruction of karma, so presumably even the arahant wouldn't be doing that because they've already destroyed all their karma.
Yeah.
So
no, they haven't.
Yeah, they're not making any karma.
Well, they haven't destroyed
their vipaka.
The karma that has occurred in the past.
Yeah.
I understand the difference, but
yes. So they haven't destroyed their. They're not making any new karma. So the.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Are they not making neutral karma? For example, arahant helps another arahant out. That's neutral karma. The best type of gift.
Yeah, it's the best type.
No
best type of giving. Yeah, but the way. Anyway, all I can say is the way that it's defined in this Vitara Sutta. It says, you know, three kinds leading to different kinds of rebirth, and then this last one it says leading to the ending of karma. So that's all I can say with that. So it's obviously leading to arahantship.
When they say that, would that imply leading to the ending of the vipaka?
Nope.
So I'm asking what kind of action would lead to that?
Yeah, of course, the Eightfold Path. Yeah.
It's defined also as the Eightfold Path.
Yeah, practicing the Eightfold Path.
What if you just ate food?
Well, and didn't do anything else.
Well, yeah, like somebody offers you a glass of water and you go,
that's a different age.
Well, the food doesn't necessarily
need
to be
Doesn't it?
At least
it does.
Or is there something like neutral, feeling neutral, like something or neutral?
Or neutral?
That's what I said, by drinking water. It's not.
Yeah, I think by drinking water you're not making karma, you're not making any ethical choice.
That's right. Like, yeah. You have to sustain the body. The arahant's unlikely to go, oh, great, water. You know, this is karma.
Yeah.
Water, okay.
Yeah.
It's neutral karma.
I think that practically speaking, I think that there's a quality that we can recognise when we're practising in a way that's very pure, and that the mind isn't caught up with the idea of cause and effect and results and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's just like a sense of being in the moment and responding to that. when we talk about like practicing the Eightfold Path, I mean they distinguish between the Lokiya path and Lokuttara path, but I think it's more there's more like a sense of I don't think that they can in practice be completely disentangled, but I think that when you're actually practicing and doing things, you know, there'll probably be at some times when you're kind of making good karma, maybe other times then you're just leading to the ending of it. Yeah. But generally speaking, it depends also where it's put, because in other places it's also put that, you know, that through the doing of good karma, then sort of the next stage beyond to that is then leading to the ending of karma. Mm. So it depends on how it's presented. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I was talking before with the definitions is jetana is karma. Yeah? So it's a psychological quality.
What's paticca sampada?
Dependent origination.
Special mentality, isn't it?
Dependent origination.
Okay.
Isn't usually explained as the exertion of will?
What?
Sankara? And in the exertion of willpower? Or decision?
Something like that, yeah.
That's Sankara, right? Just the Sankara, but they don't have it in the sense of the context of dependent origination, right? In the traditional format.
Yeah, well, you might want to do some research on that. They certainly don't have sankhara in the sense that operates independent origination. I would rather say that they still have jetana, but they don't have sankhara. Yeah.
Would they not still exert willpower, even if
sankhara? Yeah, which is the jetana. Yeah, but they're not making sankharas by that because they're not constructing a future rebirth.
So. They're not deconstructing anything, there's nothing left to deconstruct.
Right, yeah.
So like the neutral zone.
Yeah.
Definitely a trick.
Oh. Well, one's a no chance.
Okay, so let's have a look at some more suttas and maybe some of these questions might be answered as we go on, alright? Now, okay, so the next sutta talks about Dasakusala Kamapata, which anyone for French or German? It's the corresponding suttas, two in the Sanyutta and also one in the Majjhima itself. So these two, Salaika Sutta and Vairanjika Sutta, are very close. Okay, the Brahmins. Okay, so the Brahmins of Sala go and ask the Buddha a question, and he says, and the question is, how do beings go to hell or to heaven? Okay, so again, this is the question. Is an ethical question. How do you get to go to hell or to heaven, according by doing good or bad? So that's the basic context. The Buddha says there are three kinds of bodily conduct, not in accordance with Dhamma, four kinds of verbal conduct, and three kinds of mental conduct, not in accordance with Dhamma. Three kinds of bodily conduct, not in accordance with the Dhamma. Someone's a killer of living beings, murderous, bloody-handed, giving to blows and violence, and merciless to all living beings. Number one, taker of what is not given is a thief, takes another's chattels and property in the village or the forest. He is given over to misconduct and sexual desires. He has intercourse with such women as are protected by the mother, father, brother, sister, relatives, as have a husband, as entail a penalty, and also those that are garlanded in token of betrothal. So this is the standard definitions of breaking the first three precepts, and of course the one on the first two are fairly unproblematic. The one on the committing adultery is quite interesting from a cultural perspective. So it seems to be that the assumption underlying the definition, obviously it's talking from a male point of view, and so perhaps it means women can't commit sexual misconduct, but I won't go into that one. But also the assumption is basically that women were always under the protection of somebody. Yeah?
Or in a relationship.
Which would be under the protection of whoever you're in a relationship with. Yeah, protected by the mother and sister, yeah. Which seems, at the very least, seems to be quite partial. I mean, surely if you had, you know, somebody who was a widow who didn't have any relatives or something like that, then that doesn't mean that it's... Sorry? Not necessarily, no. That practice of sati wasn't attested in the Buddha's time. Yeah. Sati. Sati is where a wife burns herself on the death, on the funeral cremation pyre of her husband.
Mindfully.
No, it's nothing to do with mindfulness. It's a different word. That sati, as in
it's probably something changing.
Sati, as in the it's from the root to be. She truly is. She's real. Yeah. There's one description of sati, not when she was burnt, but when she was buried, which was told by one of the English colonials, that when they put that, buried the husband, and then the wife went into the grave and sat on the coffin, and they filled up the coffin and with dirt, and as they filled up the coffin she raised her hand and circled her finger like that. And they filled the whole thing up, and so the dirt just rose up above her head until until her finger disappeared. She still just kept making the same movement, just like that.
Is that how she
died? Yep. So, what language does it mean to be?
Sanskrit.
So
and Pali.
And Pali.
Yeah,
but it's
spelled
differently.
It's spelled the same.
It's
spelled
the same.
Yeah. But in English they usually spell it S-U-E-E. But it's that's how they usually spell it in English, but that's just the anglicized version of it, actually. Sati.
So to be mindful is kind of is to be?
No, it's got nothing to do with one another. They're completely unrelated words. In Sanskrit, mindfulness is smriti. So they're quite different in Sanskrit, actually. Yeah.
So that category of not being protected seems to mean there's like a first group of women who are protected probably due to age. I would say their first group of children, and then it says, as entails, has her husband, we're getting into the relationship side now.
Yeah.
Husband entails a penalty for those who are basically what did we call it? Engaged.
Engaged, yeah.
Token of betrothal.
Yeah. Let's have a look at the Pali for this one.
Because brothers and sisters will look after their siblings if there are no parents around.
No parents around, yeah.
Under protection.
Madu Rakita, looked after by the mother. Pitu Rakita, looked after by the father. Mata pitu rakita, looked after by mother and father. Bhatu rakita, looked after by the brother. Bhagini rakita, looked after by the sister. And kind of interesting, this kind of the reversal of the gender order. It's mother and father, and then brother and sister. But usually in Pali or in Indic languages, mother goes before father. Nyati rakita, looked after by the family. Gota rakita, looked after by the clan. Gota Rakita, so that might be like Yashoda or something like that. Dhamma Rakita, looked after by Dhamma.
What is in this
Interesting, isn't it? He has as entail a penalty. That's translated. Yeah? Oh no, is that right? As have a husband. Hang on, let me see. How good can we check the Pali for this? So Samika, it seems that he didn't translate that. Yeah, so paridanda entails a penalty. Oh well, that would be somebody who, for some reason, was protected by the law. Maybe somebody who was under child protection or something like that. And so yeah. But difficult to say exactly what it meant.
A concubine for a king or something.
Could be, yeah.
Not necessarily a wife, but.
So paridanda, so sasamika. She would be. Concubine would be sasamika. Dhammarakita is interesting. It seems to be just very general, protected by the Dhamma. But basically means somebody who's not right to have intercourse with.
Would that imply a nun?
Probably.
Like holy women, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Renunciants or something.
Yeah. I mean, Dhamma is so broad that you could put just about anything in there. Sasamika, with a husband, saparidanda, entailing a penalty, even as much as mala gula parikitapi. Mala gula. Are those garland in token of betrothal? Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. Mala is obviously a garland. Gula? What's gula? Huh? Parikita is bounded. Yeah, sorry, parikita. So that probably means she's almost like sequestered, perhaps, or she's you know, like that, because she's betrothed, she's therefore kind of protected or sealed off or something like that. But this
like an arranged marriage before the marriage occurs, the agreement would be made between the parents of the name.
Something like that, yeah. Let's see this word gula. Guna.
Iron ball.
Servant.
Gula.
Gula.
Younger form of gula. Gula. Ball, pill, gunaka tumor to make into a ball. Cot or cleat in English. Gula. Play at a ball, parimandala. Interesting. Sugar, no. Sugar, no, that's not right. Previous entry. Gula is another gula. Pill, a tumour to make into a ball, to conglomerate, to gel, clot, cleat, gunga, globule, a clump, an iron globe.
It's like round, the block size.
Yeah, curious.
Well, that first thing is
like a blood clot.
It's indicating like a cohesiveness or something. Cohesion.
None of them gives our exact context. Gula 3. Hang on, here we go. Manigula, a cluster of jewels. Okay, so this must be the one here. A cluster, a chain. Sparkling eyes, manigula. Cluster, malaguna, a cluster, a chain of flowers, a garland. Okay, so it just means a garland. Alright. So that's that. And gula, a pimple. Covered all over with pustules. Right.
A garland of pustules.
Alright, so it means somebody who's garland anyway. This
dictionary, a full version of the BTS edition of the dictionary?
Yep.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, and it's on the University of Chicago site, so it's actually legal. There's plenty of illegal versions in the wild. If you come back here. There's this PDF one, number 2, from Urban Dhamma, that's illegal.
The oven's going off.
They also do have the critical Pali dictionaries available on the web as well.
Critical?
Yeah, but it's only got a few words on it.
What does it mean to be a critical dictionary?
Basically it means like an academically perfect dictionary. Every reference to everything, every meaning, and every little strata of literature. The Pali Text Society's dictionary is very good, and but it focuses mainly on the canonical language, mm-hmm. which is actually what we're mostly used to, but it doesn't have a lot of the later usages, and it doesn't even have all the words in the Nikayas and things like that. But it's generally, as a general usage dictionary, it's still very good. But the critical Pali dictionary has a... When the Pali Text Society dictionary appeared, it was meant to be an interim dictionary. It says that in the introduction. Mm-hmm. But then they started work on this, the critical Pali dictionary. It's got completely bogged down for 40 years or more. Mm-hmm. So they've only come up with a few letters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So where are we? So sexual misconduct. Then four kinds of unrighteous... Where are we? Okay, verbal conduct. Speaking falsehood when summoned to a court or to a meeting or to his relative's presence or to his guild or to the royal family's presence and questioned as a witness. Thus, so good man, tell what you know. Then, not knowing, he says, I know, or knowing, he says, I do not know. Not seeing, he says, I see, or seeing, he says, I do not see. In full awareness, he speaks falsehood for his own ends or for another's ends or for some trifling worldly end. All right, so here's the definition of false speech. And again, just to notice that in all of these examples, what we're talking about is a serious ethical choice. Okay, we're not talking about somebody who just sort of says something, you know, quickly in passing, which maybe they regret later, or was kind of obfuscating the truth or something like that. The example they're given is someone who's called up to court and is actually a witness in the court and deliberately lies. So this is why sometimes when you see that, you do these things and you go to hell or something like that, and you think, it's not saying that
like the witness in a murder case, he says, oh no, it wasn't him.
That's right, yeah. So it's a very serious context.
The question that's often raised is whether it's an ethical situation where you're trying to save someone's life.
Yeah.
Unjust situation.
Yeah.
Which maybe trifling
means trifling? No, not really. I mean, that's because you want a bribe or something like that, you know. I would say in that case, it's then bright and dark karma. You know, if you say lie, trying to protect somebody who's actually innocent or something like that, then I think that's your intention to protect and save somebody is a good karma. Intention to lie is a dark karma, so it may mix up, and you probably end up in the human realm or something like that, you know.
That's only my becoming action now.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah.
But still, the falsehood is so serious.
Yeah. Speaks maliciously. The repeater elsewhere. What is heard here for the purpose of causing division from these or repeated to these. Or what is heard elsewhere for the purpose of causing division from those, and he is thus a divider of the united, a creator of divisions, who enjoys discord, rejoices in discord, delights in discord, a speaker of words that create discord. Okay. He speaks harshly, those words that are rough, hard, hurtful to others, censorious of others, bordering on anger and unconducive to concentration. There's a gossip, one who tells that which is unseasonable. It means what's at the wrong time, what is not fact, that is not good, that is what is not the Dhamma. Whoa! Leave him, Kim.
Sorry.
Leave him for now.
Just leave him because of the stress.
Yeah. Just leave him. Yeah. Yeah. Usually they just stand and just don't have anything.
Step his neck and that's that.
What?
Yeah.
Speaks what is not Dhamma, what is not Vinaya, speaks at the wrong time, speech not worth recording. I was unaware of the existence of MP3 in those times. Which is not worth remembering. Which is unreasoned, indefinite, and unconnected with good. Okay, so that's Acharya. Anidhana, I think. Yeah, literally not worth storing. Okay, right. Three kinds of mental conduct not in accordance with the Dhamma. Here someone is covetous. He's a coveter of others' chattels and property thus. Oh, that what is another's were mine. Okay? So this is the first one, it's covetousness. And so this is like a very strong form of desire. Yeah, it's not just kind of ordinary, just wanting somebody, something, but this is what they call like visama lobha. It's like a strong form of desire. And this is the the word is abhijja, which is the same word you find in the context of Satipatthana. It says abhijja domanasa, abandoning covetousness and ill will for the world. So this is why that word abhijja is actually translated as covetousness. Because in this context, in the 10 dasa kusala kamapata, 10 pathways of wholesome action, it's actually definitely means exactly covetousness. Right? Wishing a strong desire for the possessions of another. Of course, in the context of satipatthana, it might have a more subtle meaning, but in any case, that's why it's rendered as covetousness in that context.
What's the more subtle meaning of satipatthana?
Well, you know, there it might just mean just desire generally, yeah?
Is that something not belong to oneself, belong to other people?
Yeah. Mm. So it's not defined in the context of satipatthana. Mm-hmm. So this is the only place it's actually defined.
Right, but that's a stock phrase, isn't it? Abandoned.
It's a stock phrase.
Ajahn Brahm said that stock phrase invoking the hindrances, the abandoning of the hindrances.
Yeah, the first hindrances, Kama Chandra, is also the word abhijja is used commonly there. Yeah, in the context of the first hindrances.
So his argument is that whenever you say that, it means that you abandon hindrances and you go to jhana.
That's right. Yeah. Controversial interpretation.
Mm.
Any?
It's pretty quick, you know. I think he's on the way in.
Okay, so ill will. May these, with a mind of hate thinking, may these beings be slain and slaughtered, may they be cut off, perish, or be annihilated. Right? So this is obviously not talking about a mild annoyance. But it's talking more about the kind of intense rage which is often experienced in traffic jams and places like that. No, that's more comfy. Yeah, it's kind of good.
No, not for them. They look at the people on the counter, they think that.
No, that's right, for the workers, yeah.
Maybe they just cut off.
Okay, or there is, so it's the second one, so strong greed, strong hatred, and then wrong view is obviously a strong form of delusion. There's nothing given, nothing offered, nothing sacrificed, no fruit and ripening of good and bad karma, no this world, no other world, no mother, no father, no spontaneously born beings, no good or virtuous monks and Brahmins that have themselves realized by direct knowledge and declare this world and the other world. Okay, so this is a sort of a stock phrase. Basically, it's a complete undermining of any ethical conduct. Okay, so there's no such thing as charity or giving. There's no point in helping anybody. Doing good or doing bad doesn't have any effect. And so it's like complete cynicism and nihilism, as well also as the belief that there's no this world, no other world. Interesting that somebody should not believe in this world. Yeah. Which again is just sort of indication of that kind of radically nihilistic state of mind. No mother, no father. Okay? And presumably meaning that you don't have any, there's no kind of bonds of gratitude or duty towards your parents. No spontaneously reborn beings, refers to beings in other realms, devas and so on. No good and virtuous monks and Brahmins that themselves realize by direct knowledge and declare this world and the other world. So the point of that is that it's the belief that all the things which are talked about in religion and all these things are just a result of a tradition or a fantasy or something like that, and nobody actually knows these things and sees them. So it's complete cynical as to the actual reality of spiritual realization and the teaching. And so you remember that this is referring not to a questioning about these things, but it's to having a fixed view that this is the way things are. Yeah? And so this is a kind of a stock definition of the teaching of some of the heretical teachers at the time of the Buddha. So it's not about asking questions about these things. It's about making definitive statements definitive and strongly held views that these things do not exist.
It's also fairly contextual, is it not, Dante? Because in later suttas, the Buddha would say, people, ascetics who ask the question, "Is there a world? Mm. Is there not a world?" And he answers differently to this way. It's an unanswered question. He doesn't answer that question. Does this exist? Does that not exist?
No, so I don't think there's anywhere where he says that in terms of does the world exist or the world not exist?
Is the world eternal? Or
the world eternal or not eternal? Finite or not finite?
The ten unanswered questions.
Yeah.
Does this eternal exist after death?
They're different. But in any case, this is obviously not a sort of advanced philosophical context.
Yeah. Like when I first read that, I didn't think it was actually that extreme.
Mm.
But I think a lot of people might say they adhere to certain parts or even all of those statements, but they don't actually believe it. The way they behave doesn't actually match up with those statements.
Yeah. Okay, so it's by reason of conduct, not in accordance with conduct, that some beings here on the dissolution of the body after death reappear in states of deprivation, an unhappy destination in perdition, even in hell. Okay, so here are the words here, so standard kayasa bheda, for the breaking up of the body, paramarana, after death, apayam,
the tastiness of base confectionery.
Dukkatin, bad destiny, something like that. Vinipata, the downfall. Niraya, hell.
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Thank you.
barricade or raise up this
building.
Look at that, eh?
Yeah, we should all rush in.
I don't have a camera handy, do I? Has anyone seen those before, Andy?
No.
I mean, you see a few wedgies off in the distance. But, I'm not sure they're around. They're a pretty dull colour. They hide well in the trees.
What
the?
Cat
pictures
of cat swords.
Sorry?
Oh, wait,
Yeah, that's why they have these birds on these windows here. Yeah.
On the word Dhamma, that he wanted to come into the room, and then on the mention of hell, that he decided to get up and leave.
So then of course the reverse is the wholesome action. Three kinds of bodily conduct in accordance with Dhamma. Abandoning killing of living beings, become one who abstains from that with rod and weapon laid aside, gentle and kindly, he abides compassionate for all living beings. Abandoning taking what is not given, becomes one who abstains from taking what is not given, does not take as a thief another's chattels and property in the village or the forest, abandoning sexual misconduct, and so on. Then abandoning false speech, does not lie in court, specifically. Abandoning malicious speech, who's a reconciler of the divided, a promoter of friendships, enjoying concord, rejoicing in concord, delighting in concord. Abandoning harsh speech, he becomes one who abstains from harsh speech, speak of such words as are innocent, pleasing to the ear and lovable, goes to the heart, civil, desired of many and dear to many. So always good to remember that this is the one who abstains from gossip, is one who speaks what is at the right time, which is factual, which is good, which is Dhamma, Vinaya, and worth recording, reasoned, definite, and connected with good.
So all of these things are showing that right speech is not simply not speech, but is actually using speech in a wholesome way. Okay. And then the same for the last three. Is not covetous for another's properties. Does not wish for the destruction of beings, and does have right view, or reverses before. And this is why some beings go to heaven. Okay. Okay, so let's look at a few more short sutras. So this is quite an interesting one. Dhanavatthu Sutta. 8 bases of giving, of dana. What are the 8? People may give out of chanda. Okay, out of favoritism or something like that, out of greed. So this is where one might be cynical and think that most modern governmental aid packages were given out of chanda, a desire to get more than you give, or perhaps most of them are given out of dosa, yeah, the desire to do one better than your enemies, yeah, so you give to somebody so you can beat somebody, or perhaps they're given out of moha, out of stupidity and not knowing what to give, yeah.
Make a donation to the Taliban.
Yeah, so people give out of moha, they don't give in the right way or in a way that doesn't have any effect. Or bhaya, the danang deity. For example, the
Tamil Tigers.
Yeah, the supporters of the Tamil Tigers. You get basically you have to give money to the Tamils or Tamil Tigers, or else your family gets hit. So there's these. Sorry, this is page 169. So these four, chanda, dosa, moha, bhaya, are the four, what they call the four biases or agati.
What's chanda again?
Chanda is desire. In this context, it means something like favoritism. Yeah. So it's often used in that sense, like if you think that in the monastery. So for example, you know, you give something to someone because they're your friend or something like that. Sorry?
Like and
dislikes. Likes and dislikes, yeah. Give someone to somebody that you like, yeah.
Partiality,
exactly, yeah. Okay. Or out of fear or with the thought, such gifts have been given before by my father and grandfather, and it was done by them before, hence it would be unworthy of me to give up this old family tradition.
We encountered that in the last week.
Yeah. Keeping up family traditions. Yeah, yeah. The Kulavansa. Ancient Kulavansa. Narahami. Again, this is a verb form of arahant. Actually, interesting showing us the ordinary language usage of the word arahant. It would not be worthy of me to give up this, to abandon this ancient, almost literally to destroy this ancient family lineage, ancient family tradition. Or with the thought, so we've had like four causes of giving which are clearly unwholesome motivation, and then one which is perhaps neither wholesome nor unwholesome, but fairly neutral. Or with the thought, by giving this gift, I will be reborn in a good destination in a heavenly world after death. Okay, so this is a very common motivation in Buddhist countries, and when I learnt about when I was in Chiang Mai and when I was
talking in the restaurant and someone saying, oh, they're buying XYZ to give to the monks today. And I said, oh, why are you buying that? She said, because I really like it. I said, shouldn't you give what the monks like or what you like? She said, no, we believe that when you give the food that you'll get to eat that when you go to heaven. So you give the food that you want to have when you're in heaven.
Right. So on the scale of wholesome, unwholesome, Bhante, where does that lie?
Well, it seems to be getting better as it goes along.
Uh-huh.
Yeah?
I heard one story that apparently someone had a dream that they were in heaven and that there was no water in heaven. And then they figured out the reason why there was no water in heaven was because they'd never offered any water.
Yeah.
So, from now on, there's this tradition that you always offer a bottle of water to the monasteries.
And to the monks on Pindabat, which is pretty... It's a real hassle because you get all this water. I mean, you've got rain tanks full of water in the monastery, yeah? And you have to carry these incredibly heavy water around on Pindabata. So, yeah.
First
time
in
Thailand.
Is
that? That would be interesting. What's the tap water quality like?
Doesn't keep it.
No, well, it hasn't killed me. Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Tastes right.
Yeah, it tastes fine. Okay, then the next one. By giving this dana, my mind will be glad. Chittang pasidati. Glad, it means also like clear. And happiness and joy, attamanata and somanasa, will arise. Okay, so giving dana. And then the last one, one gives because it adorns and ennobles the mind. Okay, citta alankara, citta parikara.
Is that a reference to Sri Lanka?
No. Alankara. Citta alankara is an adornment of the mind. Parikara, literally the equipment, yeah? Borikan. Okay, so it's a kind of gradual movement in motivations. So it's interesting to know this one because people often ask this question about, you know, why do you give dana or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And so.
It's interesting that in no cases, even at the highest, is there a motivation that is devoid of hope of some kind of return?
And nor
at any point does it say it should be given to bhikkhus or bhikkhunis, but that the offering should be specifically to those parties.
Yeah, and nor does it say anything about the recipients, and one should give because it's going to help the recipients.
Mm. Well, I sort of implied that, though.
It's not just about giving to the
No, it's just since it was just pointing out that was not the case.
Because some monks will use this idea of, you know, giving and getting merits as a justification to.
Oh, that's another subject.
To hoard things.
That's number one.
Which one?
On page 169.
Uh huh.
The one just before the one.
Oh, yeah. So the one just before that, it says, amongst the people knew as I know the result of giving and sharing, they would not eat without having given, nor would they allow the stain of niggardliness to obsess them and take root in their minds. Even if it were their last morsel, their last mouthful, they would not eat without having shared it, if there were someone to share it with. But monks, as people do not know, as I know, the result of giving and sharing, they do eat without having given, and the stain of niggardliness obsesses them and takes root in their minds.
So niggardliness. Stinginess or...
Stinginess might have been better, yeah.
I think it's like one of those words.
Like pity or reluctant in giving or spending. There you go. So
Avans, to ennoble and adorn the mind.
Yeah.
Ennoble the mind, yeah, to adorn the mind. I think it just means that you give because it's just a beautiful thing, you know, a beautiful thing to do with the mind. Seven is more sort of specifically just like a cycle, you're like, because you're experiencing a kind of emotion. Yeah, so you experience a feeling of joy. I think it's a more elevated kind of thing. It's similar, but it's more elevated. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, there's the recollection on generosity.
Yeah. It's one of the anusatis.
Exactly part of the meditation. Chaganusati. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be part of the meditation practice that reflect on all the good actions that you've done.
Yep.
What's that?
Well, this is the translation. This is the chant that we do at the mealtime. Oh, not the chant, but it has the words from there. So living Buddha was living among the Kaulians. Kaulians being the family of, so we were thinking of the other day, the family of Mahamaya. So this is the family that the villagers in the Sujata village opposite Bodh Gaya claim to be from the Kaulian clan. Interestingly enough, whether that's an actual genuine tradition or whether it's a bid for tourist dollars seems to be a bit unclear at the moment. Okay, so Kaulians a town called Sajanela. No. So what? Sajanela. We've got two different Kaulias with Viharati. We've got Pajanika. Sajanela. Two completely different towns listed here. That's interesting. And then the Blessed One, taking his bowl, and went to the dwelling of Supavasa, a Kaulian lady. Kaulyadita, daughter of the Kaulians, approached there. Having approached, he sat down on the seat made ready. Then she, after the meal, serves him with various kinds of delicious food, panita karni and boninia, with her own hand, sahata. And then, when the Blessed One had finished his meal and withdrawn his hand from the bowl, the Kaulian lady Supavasa sat down on one side and the Blessed One addressed her as follows. So notice that in this is obviously the original tradition that the blessing or the teaching on dana would be given after the meal, not before it as we do it from the Thai tradition. So Supavasa, somebody who's giving food, and a noble disciple, he's a female noble disciple, Aryasavika. Giving food gives four things to those who receive it. Then she gives ayu, vana, sukham, balam. Okay. So she gives life, beauty, happiness, and bala, strength. Literally strength, but means health, good health. Okay. And by giving long life, she herself will be endowed with long life, whether human or divine. By giving beauty, by giving happiness, by giving strength, she herself will be endowed with these things, whether human or divine. Presumably, if he could, yeah, if he could produce food, yeah. It's a And now, interesting, they've got this quite nice little anumodana here, but we don't use it as part of the anumodana verses. So maybe we should do.
Isn't the one that we use Pate pretty much non-dharma at the beginning? It's non-dharma stuff, like maybe free from disasters and this sort of rubbish.
Yeah, it sounds.
It's like the Buddha criticizes that type of speech himself, doesn't he? By this month, do you think you will have heard such and such, or by this wish, will you become happy, or something like that? And they will know that also.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think this is.
It turns from Dhamma teaching into a blessing.
Yeah. Well, one thing that we can say is if you look at the anumodanas, one way you tell any of the anumodanas, the way to tell which one is canonical and which one is non-canonical is always very easy. You see whether they are tis or tus. Okay, and the tis, sorry? The tis, in the canonical anumodanas, like this one, the verb forms are ti. Charanti, darati, and so on, and that being, of course, the feet forms, darati.
Oh, that's the end of the quote, isn't it?
No. Sorry?
He.
He. Yeah.
Single masculine.
No, not very masculine. There's a woman giving here. It's a verb form, not a noun form. T is, what tense is it?
Oh, that's a verb.
No, okay. It's a present indicative verb, meaning to give, yeah? And the ones that we have in our chanting, you have bhavatu and all the tu forms, and tu means may they. So the difference here, when the Buddha's teaching it, it's always, if you do this, this is what happens. Yeah, it's a teaching of it's a pointing out of cause and effect. Yeah, for somebody who does this, this is what the result is. And whereas the ones we do, it's always this tu, which always means may there be. Yeah. There are a few things like that where the Buddha does that in the suttas, but not so often.
So, what does an indicative mean?
Indicative just means it's just an ordinary tense. Yeah, he goes to the shop.
And what's tu?
Tu is the, what do they call it? Is the imperative sense, may it be. Yeah, so like suki hotu, may you be happy. Yeah. So it is an interesting difference, I have to admit.
So imperative doesn't mean command?
No, it's not a commanding form. It's just the ordinary present tense of performing an action, yeah. So someone who gives well-prepared food. Okay, someone who gives well prepared food, that's clean and refined with good taste. So on. Okay. Alright, so we've had the kitchen one. Any other specific ones that someone wants to go through in the chapter before we finish? We won't be able to do all of them, but we'll be able to do one or two more. Any specific ones? So this is just a nice one always to bear in mind. Monks, the Brahmins and householders are very helpful to you. They provide you with the requisites of robes, answered lodgings and medicines in times of sickness. And you, monks, are very helpful to Brahmins and householders as you teach them the Dhamma that is good in the beginning, the middle and the end with the correct meaning and wording. And you proclaim the spiritual life in its fulfillment and complete purity. Thus, monks, this spiritual life is lived with mutual support for the crossing of the flood and making a complete end of suffering. Samadukkhaya.
Right. No requests for any specific suttas. Simple.
What about this? Is there one there about is there one there about the different levels of merit that like when you give to the order and then give to the under?
Yeah, that's the last. The last one is there. Yeah, there's one like that. A good one. 1.20. Another kind of thing. Rama. It's interesting. Is there?
Apparently, yeah. In fact, some schools will list the Buddha as the top. Some schools will list the Sangha as a whole at the top.
Okay, this is not the Dakina Vibhanga Sutta. It's another one, but it has a similar kind of thing. It'd be interesting to compare the two. This one has four. It's in the Madhyama Agama. So actually has five Chinese cognates, obviously included in the Majjhima. So these are all Majjhima style suttas, and also including the Kottara Agama. So we can have a look at that. Okay, so the Buddha's talking to Anathapindika and gives a story of the past, Bhutapubbam, which means once upon a time, right? So Bhutapubbam is always the word that's used to introduce a fable or something of the far past. There was a Brahmin named Velama. This is page 178 for those who are looking for it. He gave such great alms offering as this: 84,000 bowls of gold filled with silver, 84,000 bowls of silver filled with gold, 84,000 bronze bowls filled with bullion, 84,000 elephants, chariots, milch cows, maidens, and couches. Alright. So you're giving away kind of a curious list where you include maidens next to couches. I suppose. Yeah, that's right, and there's actually a similar kind of valuation, I think, in the Iliad as well. I think you get this kind of thing that they're kind of a female slave is worth something less than a bronze bowl or something like that. Let's have a look at this. Where's the maidens? Dasi godi, godi ka, godi ka, godi. Kadarimi Bhavatani Sa Uttara Chadani Ubato Loitika. Couches. Elephants. We're just about to get it. We'll get it further on. Just trying to find it. Venu Sahasani Dati Elephants. Chariots. Palanka, let's see. Ah, Mutta, money. Come on, you know. Shelfers, chariots. God, I can't find all these things in this list. Gona. I can't find all these things here. I'm not sure if it's even. Oh, here we have. Yeah, here we have. That's right, 84,000. Kanya. I was looking for the wrong word. Kanya, the maidens, yeah. Yep, that's what it says. Many millions of fine cloths and indescribable amounts of food, drink, ointment, and bedding. Okay. Okay, as great as was the alms offering Brahman Velama gave, it would be even more fruitful if one would feed a single person possessed of right view. So Bhikkhu Bodhi is a bit of a condensed translation here. Anyway, Dakinam Uksodeti. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Is a stream enterer. And then the next one is a Sakadagami, is even more. Anagami is even more. And then an Arahant is even more. And if you give to 100 Arahants, it's even better. If you can find them. Even more fruitful if you can find a single Pacheka Buddha, or even 100 Pacheka Buddhas, even better. Anyone who feeds the Arahant, okay? Anyone who feeds the Buddha Bamukhang Bhikkhu Sanghang. Okay, so that means you invite the Buddha together with the Sangha for a meal, and you, if you offer even more, is you if you offer a vihara, a monastery, to the Sangha of the Four Directions. Okay, so this is a convention. The Sangha of the Four Directions is like the universal Sangha. So as you're not giving to just one particular monk or nun or particular group, but you're saying this is for the use of the Sangha for all time. So this is always said to be the best way to offer something. And then if you give with a mind of faith, you go to for refuge to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, is even better. And if with a mind of faith you undertake the five precepts, Panakipata Viramani, Adinadana, Kamesu, Musavada, Surameraya Majapamada, Tana, right? Or even if you should Ganda Gandho Hana Mattampi Metta Chittang Bhaveya, so you develop a mind of metta for that long. Oh, isn't it? Oh, sorry, my mistake. Snap of a finger. Yeah, you're right. Sorry. Okay, can paper pull together? That's this long.
Do you have to make that noise?
That's longer. Yeah, it's quite a bit longer, yeah? Okay. Yeah, okay. So. And then if you do even better is for Achara Sanghata Matampi Anicca Sanyang. Develop a perception of impermanence. Then that's even better. So is alright, so as great as all this would be, it would be even more fruitful if one would develop the perception of impermanence just for the time it takes to snap one's fingers.
When it says develop the mind of metta,
yeah.
So that's not the shallow, may B, C, D be happy. It actually needs to be some, what level of attainment of metta and meditation.
Yeah, well, it depends. I mean, probably the commentary would say that the development of metta is metta jhana at that point,
right.
And they would probably say the perception of impermanence is stream entry at that point. But whether that's implied by the text may be a matter for debate. Yeah.
Because it seems like the contrast of the lesson is
yeah.
So much more valuable to cultivating yourself and your awareness.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why the context
was. Oh, okay. How did it come about? So it came about. Here we go. Anatta Pindika approaches the Blessed One and says to him, the Buddha said to Anatta Pindika, do you give offerings to the family? Or the family offerings? Yes, I do give the family offerings. Sanchako lukhang kamajakang bilanga dutiyang. Aya can translate that bit for us. Lukhang kanajakang. I don't know what kanajakang means. Lukhang, I think, is rough, isn't it? Is Luka rough? I think, I don't know. Kanajaka, I don't know what that means at all. Bilanga, isn't that a cat? No, it's Bilara, it's a cat. Bilanga, Dutiyang.
Yeah, so lukha must be coarse, because here it says lukhancha gapiti dana geti panitam va. Yeah? So one gives either rough or coarse things. Does that make sense? I'm not quite sure how to translate that. I'll try and look at the full translation to be able to look at that. So, I don't know if we can have time to have a look through. If I can read this for us.
She's taking the right image.
I pick up. You're trying to have a look? Yeah? Four somethings.
This one is talking about the Brahma, the Lama who gave all those things.
Okay, oh, that's the list of all the things, yeah?
So, those are the one was talking about, the one is speaking about whom you give to,
yeah.
And the refuge to receive, the, take the three refugees.
That's right. So, where's the three refugees? Refuge. Five precepts? Different in the details, yeah? Mm-hmm. Some similarities, but different in the details. We can't go through all this. Did it mention... Oh, it's too long. These are whole Majjhima suttas here.
And if karma is defined as chetna,
yeah.
And the purpose of that is to... refute the grammatical idea that karma is external. How does that connect to the idea that how good or the extent which karma is good is connected to the outcome? So like you may intend, say you say like I intend to give to this monk in front of me, not knowing that that monk is an arahant. But it seems that because
the idea there is that because you don't know, so you have the same intention, yeah, but the result is different, yeah. So the idea there is like a comparison with say a seed. So you can cast the seed on the ground, but then how much actually grows also depends on the ground. So it depends on your intention. So, yeah, but there are also factors which are beyond your control. Yeah, so the idea that karma is intention doesn't mean that it's purely determined by factors which are under your control. It means that you're setting the basic direction that it's going in, but the specific way that it would fruit would also interact with many other causes. That's like a specific case of the idea that there are many causes and conditions involved. So for example, you might do a karma, right? So I might die today, and I might do a good karma, yeah, for a change. And then, because I've done lots of bad things also in my life, and a few good things, maybe a mixed karma, and maybe I get reborn in the human realm, right? So maybe I die, I get reborn in the human realm, okay? Now, I can't choose the fact that I'm getting reborn in the human realm where there, for example, are mobile phones and global warming, yeah? And these kinds of things. That's not under my control, yeah? So that doesn't get affected. Whereas if I did the same karma maybe 1,000 years ago, I'd also get reborn in the human realm, but I still would experience different. The specific results would be different,
mm-hmm.
but the sort of the general tendency would be the same. Yeah. But that's also it's like a specific case of giving to people. So in that case, if you don't know whether somebody's an arahant or something like that, you basically have to use the shotgun approach. You know, just use. Give to anyone you can.
Yeah.
Sooner or later, you'll get one. Yeah.
Hedge your bets.
Yeah. Yeah, but that comes back to the previous sutta, is that the attitude of giving because that's what you want to get is only kind of moderately good one. It's not the most wholesome kind of motivation. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
I can't see any mention of impermanence, but there's another part which says that we should not think that this world is simple color, that we cannot think that there's happiness in this world.
Which line is that?
Number
19. You can get the lines from the side.
The first few words, you cannot have the notion to think that this world is full of happiness.
Okay, like developing dispassion for the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you must not have attachment, and you must do it out of your own tense.
Hmm.
And blind body is not defined, and do not have expectation of rewards, or do not have expectation of receiving blessings.
Hmm.
So in this way, the Dhamma Sangha receives Wu Qiang Zigong immeasurable blessings.
Hmm.
So, Wu Qiang Zigong, Dhamma Sangha, so he was telling that this is the way things should be done. This is the way offering should be done.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. It's interesting that it says you should give without the expectation of reward. Yeah.
Makes it more explicit.
This is the EA one. So this is in the Akotara Agama, this one? Yeah. Oh, interesting. So they seem to have, they've all got a similar text, but there's quite a lot of differences in the details. Yeah?
So when they've written it out, give, it's important to give without expecting reward. That's probably a reaction to the development at the time of a Buddhism where people are just trying to get
rid of it. Yeah, the idea of spiritual materialism.
Get rich, get ahead.
Yeah. So... Okay. Alrighty, so that's probably enough for today. Thank you very much, everybody. So next next week we'll have a look at deepening one's perspective on the world. All right.